This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
January 24th, a Twitch live stream, an 18-year-old singer and a 13-year-old girl laughing, talking into the early morning hours, sitting next to each other on camera for the world to see. And then near the end, he looks over, laughs, and says two words, delete everything. Delete everything. Those words didn't delete anything. The live stream is archived, the relationship it captured kept going, allegedly. And 14 months later, according to prosecutors, the girl sitting next to him in that video, a child named Celeste Rivas Hernandez, 13 at the time, walked into his Hollywood Hills home and was never seen or heard from again. Her name was Celeste. She was from Lake Elsinore, California. Her parents immigrated from El Salvador. She was reported missing three separate times in the final year of her life. And the man prosecutors allege is responsible for her death, David Anthony Burke, the 21-year-old now singer known professionally as David D4VD, has now been formally charged with her murder. Your thoughts in the comment section as we work our way through the latest in this story, and I guess the inevitable of what has finally transpired, with charges now being brought against Burke that aren't just severe. They tell a story. And the story that Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office is telling is one of calculation, silence, and self-preservation at the cost of a child's life. Now, I want to caution everybody, we're going to go through all of the charges. I'm going to say this, and it's in no way trying to stand up for David, but we are at the very beginning of this case. I know it's been dragging on forever, but truly, now that charges have been brought, we are at the very beginning of the new chapter in the case, I should say. We've turned a page. We've turned a leaf. We're going in a new direction here. And anytime this happens, anytime you have charges being brought by a district attorney, by a prosecutor, they basically have the stage right now. Whatever they're going to say, the full attention of the audience is on them. There's no one on that stage at this moment saying, I don't think so. Whoa. Hold on a second here. What you're saying, we don't agree with. We don't think that that's true. Now, that could be because someone's defending someone who's guilty, or could be because someone's defending somebody who is not guilty. Someone who has a story that the DA's version of events may not be completely accurate to reality. That's why we have courts. That's why this is likely going to go to trial at some point in time. So both sides can present their case and say, here's why we think we're innocent. Here's why we think you're guilty. And then it's up to a jury of his peers, 12 people, to decide who they actually believe. But in the noise of all of this, at this moment in time, it is the stage of the DA and the prosecution. They're bringing the charges, and it sounds pretty nasty, and it sounds pretty horrible. But before we make a full judgment here on anything, let's hear what he has to say. The defense of David has said that they have not gotten all of their discovery materials yet. Prosecution saying there's like 40-some terabytes of digital information, which, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be pretty damning if there's some stuff on there that points to guilt. Digital trails, Google histories, text messages, emails, all of it, all of that. If there's stuff within that that points to David being, number one, calculating, planning the death of Celeste, number two, the cover-up of what happened to her and the motive behind all of that. The DA seems to think that they got quite a case here, so much so that they're saying this was done to further his career. Not like killing somebody's going to help you go further in life, but more so killing somebody will prevent someone from not going further in life. Meaning if information were to come out that an adult is having a relationship with a child, that might hinder one's musical career or ticket sales or album sales. At least you'd think it would. I mean, yeah, we got a great track record in this country of supporting folks like that. Well into the darkness. At a press conference on April 20th, 2026, DA Nathan Hochman stood alongside LAPD Chief Jim McDonnell and laid out the most serious charges his office can bring. First-degree murder with special circumstances. Continuous S abuse of a minor. Lewd and lascivious S acts with an individual under the age of 14. Mutilation of human remains. Hochman called it a brutal and horrific act. And, yeah, it wasn't wrong. But the special circumstances attached to the big charge of murder are where the prosecution's theories become something more than a charge sheet. They become a motive map, if you will. The first special circumstance, lying in wait. That's the prosecution saying this was not a flash of rage, not an accident, not a moment of panic. They're alleging premeditation, that Burke planned what allegedly happened inside that house. The second, murder for financial gain. And Hochman was blunt about what that means. He stated directly that the financial gain was for Burke to maintain his very lucrative music career, a career that Celeste was reportedly threatening on the night of April 23rd, 2025. According to prosecutors, a 14-year-old girl's knowledge of their relationship, her ability to speak about it publicly, her existence as a living witness to what was allegedly happening between them, all of it treated as a liability, at least that's according to the prosecution, a threat to streams, record deals, brand partnerships, world tour. The prosecution is alleging that her life was weighed against his career, and his career won. The third, taking out a witness in an investigation. Celeste herself was the witness. The S relationship between the minor and the adult, that was the underlying crime she could have testified to. Prosecutors allege she was reportedly silenced to make sure she never would. Connect those three special circumstances together, and it's like picture page, you know, with creepy Bill Cosby hosting, you know. Hey, kids, let's connect the dots here. Let's, you know, remember picture page? Anybody have nightmares of picture page? You're like, that sounds familiar. Google it. Connect those three special circumstances together and prosecutors' theories become clear. Burke allegedly didn't harm Celeste despite who he was. He allegedly harmed her because of who he was and what he stood to lose if she ever spoke. That's the prosecution's theory. If convicted as charged, Burke faces life in prison without the possibility of parole or the death penalty. Hochman stated that the decision on whether his office will seek the death penalty will be made at a later date, but it's very much on the table. Now, before we get to what prosecutors alleged happened inside that house on April 23rd, it's worth understanding something about this relationship because it wasn't hidden. Pieces of it were sitting in plain sight across multiple platforms for years, visible to anyone who cared to look. Let's start with the digital trail. Celeste was reportedly a member of Burke's official Discord server as early as 2022. Other users on the server referred to a user named Celeste as Burke's girlfriend. That's not buried intelligence. That's a public chat room. Then came the January 24 Twitch live stream, Burke and Celeste on camera together, him laughing and telling her to delete everything. Between January and March of 24, Burke was photographed stepping out of a black Tesla just blocks from Celeste's family home in Lake Elsinore. CNN geolocated the and verified the timing of those alleged images. And by June of 24, Celeste was photographed backstage, allegedly at Burke's sold-out show at the Fonda Theater in Los Angeles. A private investigator later uncovered additional images that appear to show them together as recently as late December 24 and early January 25. They reportedly had matching tattoos, the shh inked on their right index fingers. Celeste's mother confirmed her daughter had a boyfriend named David. Her brother told NBC LA that Celeste went missing after Burke picked her up in his Tesla Now, I have questions as to why you're letting a 13-year-old girl go out with a 19, 20-year-old man as a parent. I've addressed that already. And I think it's part of the story. This was not an invisible relationship. It was documented in live streams, photographs, Discord messages, tattoos, and family testimony. The question this case keeps forcing is not just what happened to Celeste, it's how something this visible went on for this long without anyone in a position of authority stepping in to protect a 13-year-old girl. Mom, Dad, I get you're grieving. That's horrible. I cannot imagine the shit you're going through. But there is a little thing called accountability. And just because tragedy strikes, it doesn't erase that from your fold. Because while all this was happening, Celeste was disappearing. She was reported missing three times in the final year of her life, according to the Riverside County Sheriff's Office. She last ran away on April of 24. She last contacted her family in May of 24. Surveillance footage and digital evidence confirmed she was still alive as late as September of 24 and January 25. Each time she was reported missing, the system had an opportunity to find her, to ask where she'd been, to follow the trail that was sitting right there in the open. Each time, that opportunity passed. LAPD Chief McDonald confirmed that Celeste was last known to be alive on April 23rd of 2025 when she arrived at Berg's Hollywood Hills home. 12 days earlier, on April 11th, Berg had stood on the Gobi stage at Coachella, one of the biggest music festivals on the planet, performing for thousands of fans during his debut at the festival. He attempted a backflip, face planted hard enough to nearly knock himself up, got up laughing, and finished the set. The moment went viral. He joked about it online afterward, promising to redeem himself the following weekend. Before that Coachella performance, Berg told People magazine he was moving very militant, very tactical, very intentional with his year. His debut album, Withered, was set to drop on April 25th, just 2 days after what prosecutors allege happened inside that house. The world tour was booked. The career was bursting. He was living the trajectory every young artist chases. And 12 days after that performance, according to prosecutors, a 14-year-old girl walked into his Hollywood Hills home. D.A. Hochman's words, she was never heard from again. Her body was found 5 months later, September 8th of 25, 1 day after what would have been Celeste's 15th birthday. Workers at a Hollywood tow yard called police after noticing a foul odor coming from an impounded Tesla registered to Berg. The vehicle had been abandoned on a street in the Hollywood Hills, not far from the rental property where Berg had been living, parked there for over a month before parking enforcement had it towed. When officers opened the front trunk, they found two bags. According to grand jury documents, one contained a decomposed head and torso. The other contained arms and legs. Where was David Anthony Berg when Celeste's remains were discovered? He was in Minneapolis. Minneapolis! Yes, that's a reference to the Janet Jackson song, where they... Minneapolis! On a world tour, promoting his debut album. The album was called Withered. Let me tell you, he took people on an escapade. The spokesperson for Berg told NBC Los Angeles at the time that the singer was fully cooperating with the authorities. An LAPD source later told People magazine that this was allegedly not the case, that Berg had not been cooperative in the investigation. The gap between the public statement and the alleged reality is worth sitting with. According to TMZ, some of Berg's friends reportedly believe Celeste was a 19-year-old college student. And looking at her, you might guess that, too. After she was seen attending age-restricted events. If that's accurate, it raises its own set of questions about what Berg's inner circle knew, what they were told, and what they chose not to ask. The medical examiner ruled Celeste's death a homicide. The autopsy findings were sealed by a judge at the request of the LAPD, but Hochman indicated at the press conference that the coroner's report is expected to be released, revealing cause of death publicly for the first time since the case began. That moment, when we learn how Celeste died, will be a turning point in how the public understands what allegedly happened inside that house. Hochman also stated clearly that prosecutors have the goods, he claims, physical evidence and forensic and digital evidence that they intend to present in court to prove these charges beyond a reasonable doubt. McDonald acknowledged that the investigation faced serious challenges. The substantial gap between Celeste's death and the discovery of her remains meant crucial evidence had degraded or disappeared. Detectives also had to work through a significant amount of false information that had been circulating publicly. But the charges filed suggest prosecutors believe they have enough, and then some. Burke's defense team, attorneys Blair Burke, Marilyn Benarski, and Regina Peter have stated they will vigorously defend his innocence. Their position laid out in a statement after his arrest, the actual evidence in this case will show that David Burke did not commit this act and was not the cause of Celeste's death. They noted prior to the charges being filed that no grand jury indictment had been returned, and that Burke had only been detained on suspicion. Those are experienced attorneys. Blair Burke has represented some of the biggest names in the entertainment industry. This defense will not be passive. But presumption of innocence is a legal standard, not a shield from scrutiny. The charges filed against Burke, if the evidence supports them, paint a picture of something profoundly calculated, not passion, not panic. Alleged premeditation for self-preservation. Meanwhile, Celeste's family, who had been silent since her body was discovered, finally spoke. Her father, Jesus Rivas, simply said, "Thank God, justice for Celeste." Their attorney, Patrick Steinfeld, said the family is committed to ensuring Celeste's voice is heard and her memory is honored throughout this process. Hochman described the family's grief as incalculable. They attended the arraignment, their first public appearance since losing their daughter. Only that amount of vigor had been there while she was alive to keeping her, I don't know, home, keeping her safe, to keeping her protected, you know, like your job as an effing parent. Burke remains held without bail. The arraignment is expected to proceed with the formal charges now filed. The coroner's report, sealed since November 25, is expected to be made available, which will reveal how Celeste died. And the DA's office will decide at a later date whether to seek the death penalty. There is a lot of legal road ahead, but something Hochman said at the press conference does keep echoing. A parent's nightmare is a situation where your daughter goes out one night and never comes back. Well, she was doing that quite a bit. Celeste Rivas Hernandez went out. She walked into a house in the Hollywood Hills. She was 14 years old. Her parents came from El Salvador. She was reported missing three times, and three times the system meant to protect her let her slip through. She was allegedly in a relationship with a famous singer that was visible on Twitch, on Discord, on Instagram, backstage at concerts, in matching tattoos. And still, nobody with the power to intervene did so in time. And I think, again, that's key. With the power to do so, did so in time. With the power to do so. That means parents. I'm not writing them off. Because they were busy, because they were working, because they're immigrants, because this or that. It's not a free pass, and I'm not going to give it one on this show. There deserves to be some light shown there. And I'm not blaming them for her death, but when a child that age, I have one that age, I cannot conceive of what she was allowed to just go, "Oh, she's got a boyfriend going out for the night. He's 19. It's like, yeah, may I remind you, you're the parents. She doesn't have free range. She's a child. And maybe that's the sad part of this whole damn story. It appears, in my opinion, that so many people in this case didn't look at her as a child. They treated her like an adult, and she wasn't. And now she's dead because of that. The system that failed Celeste while she was alive is now being asked to deliver something for her in death. Charges have been filed, the most serious charges a DA's office can bring. Whether the evidence holds, whether the system follows through, whether justice actually arrives for a girl from Lake Elsinore, whose life allegedly became inconvenient to some with power, and not something enough to, I guess, pay responsible attention to as a parent, that's the only question that matters now. And it's a question a lot of families in this country have to ask. Most of them never get an answer. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversation right there. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our reporting as we continue to follow this case. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.